Let's call the second case.
The court will now call Harry Vizios versus Town of Lakewood Village, Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Arthur J. Anderson will argue for the appellant. Mr. W. M. Anderson, William Andrew Becker will argue for the appellant.
All right, let's proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Art Anderson, representing Harry Vizios, who's the appellant. Justice, I'd like to note that you put it on for our case, not the case before us. So I don't know if that means anything.
It was because I wanted to ask permission first.
We're asking that the Court of Appeals reverse the trial court's temporary injunction order. We believe the trial court abused its discretion in this case because the town cannot show a probable right of recovery at the final trial on the merits. And the reason is that Lakewood Village, as a general law town, lacks the statutory or constitutional authority to extend its building codes to its ETJ. The case law consistently says that a municipality possesses authority to regulate land development in its ETJ only to the extent it is legislatively granted that authority. And in this case, we believe that that authority has not been granted. The town started passing these ordinances in about the 2010 timeframe to extend their building codes to the ETJ. There's various different ordinances. As part of the subdivision ordinance, they extended it. It's my understanding there's been only three cases or reported opinions on the issue of extending building codes to the ETJ. Two of them were addressed on relatively narrow grounds. That's the Hartzell case out of the Dallas Court of Appeals, the Runaway Bay case out of this Court of Appeals, relatively recent, last 10 years probably. The Lucas case goes back to 86, is a Dallas Court of Appeals case. That particular case had a more global application because in that case, Dallas Court of Appeals said that Chapter 212, which is the planning statute, provides the necessary authority for a town to extend its building codes to the ETJ. The other two cases were much more narrow. It didn't go to that underlying issue, which makes sense because the courts typically don't like to strike down ordinances if they can find that it doesn't apply in a particular situation. So if the Court of Appeals decides to make the decision, it can make the narrow holding in this case. And the narrow holding in this case is based upon the applicability of Section 212.007 of the Local Government Code. And that particular statute states that when you have a tract that's being subdivided, that it is in two different ETJs, which in this case, the Sunrise Bay Edition is. It's in Little Elm, it's in Lakewood Village. To decide who's going to have jurisdiction over the planning process, you go to the city that is largest. And the evidence is undisputed that that was Little Elm back in 95 when the plat was approved as the largest today. Will always be the largest from the evidence that was presented. So if the city, in its ordinances, it basically states, and the only case law is the Lucas case that says that a city has the authority to extend its building code to its ETJs pursuant to Chapter 212, then it has to be commensurate with the platting of the property and the development of the property. In other words, if it's not part of the subdivision process or platting, then it can't, by logical extension, allow the building code to be applied. And that, I think that's related to the Milestone Petranco case out of San Antonio. This court put that, in, I think, in footnote 4 of the Runaway Bay case. There's a discussion in there that kind of goes to the underlying issue that we're talking about in terms of 212. But in that case, the city of San Antonio argued that they could apply their tree ordinance, which clearly doesn't have to do with dividing land or public infrastructure, which are typical subdivision platting issues, to a tract of land in the ETJ. And the court said that's part of the platting process and that the city of San Antonio had the authority to do that. There was an argument made at that case which said, well, they're going to try to apply it to other cases that don't involve platting. And the San Antonio Court of Appeals said, no, it's just limited. If you're going to try to take advantage of 212, which allows 212.03, allows the extension of subdivision regs to the ETJ, you can only apply that type of ordinance pursuant to the platting of property pursuant to 212.03. And it's not applied to a tract that's not involved in that process, which is what we have here. We already have a platted tract of land, okay? So there's no subdivision process to go through in this case that would allow the extension of the building codes to the ETJ. If this property were to be replatted, it would have, or for example, a plat vacation, there's these different options in 212, that would have to be done by Little L. Basically, there's absolutely no platting jurisdiction at all that Lakewood Village would have in this particular case. So that could be the relatively narrow issue if the court so decides that the court could rule that in this particular case, without going to the legislative authority aspect, that Lakewood Village cannot apply their building code in this case because they don't have subdivision authority.
Can you talk to me about subchapter A and B?
Yes.
Why A is inapplicable and B is, from your standpoint?
Let me kind of continue with that. So that the bigger picture in terms of going to the legislative authority, which I think is what you're referring to, Justice McCoy, because now in Lucas, we had one statute, the revised civil statutes had 970A. It didn't have subchapter B at that time. Subsequently, 978 gets codified like a lot of the revised civil statutes did. As part of that codification and subsequently, the legislature decided to have a process for requiring building permits when you have site development, and that's subchapter B. That's basically unrelating to dividing land up into lots and dedicating streets, kind of like the case you just had, that you had a plat that showed the dedication of a street. Don't want to go into that one. But that it's basically, if you don't have that situation, somebody wants to build something, they would have to require this development plat if it applies. The legislature says in subchapter B that it cannot be applied in the ETJ. The building code cannot be extended. There's nothing in subchapter A that says that building codes can be extended to the ETJ. There's nothing that says that. It's not expressed at all. That's basically what Lucas said, was basically they said that's kind of part of the deal in terms of subdividing land. It would include the construction of housing. What we have mentioned in our reply brief is that since then, the Dallas Court of Appeals handed down the Levy decision. And in the Levy decision, they specifically say that case involved a land plant in the ETJ. And the court said, a city is statutorily prohibited from regulating land use and construction on property in its ETJ. A city may apply only its subdivision ordinances to such property. It doesn't mention, Levy doesn't mention the Lucas case by name because it didn't, that case, Levy did not involve a building permit issue. So it did not mention it by name. We are arguing that in essence, though, repealed or overruled the Lucas decision, because the Dallas Court of Appeals, in the only case that I found that has basically, you know, referenced that issue is Lucas. There's not a lot of case law out there that relies on Lucas to support the extension of the building code to its ETJ. So our argument is that the same Court of Appeals that passed Lucas now has a new opinion and has a new direction that by implication has overruled the Lucas decision.
And B was not in existence when Lucas was decided, correct?
I think that is correct, Your Honor, because that would have been, I'm sorry, Judge, 970A was in effect when Lucas was enacted. Subchapter B came afterwards.
Right.
And then there are other statutes as part of that. For example, there's a statute that requires all cities to enact the International Residential Code and the various codes that go with that. It specifically says in there that they can apply it in a municipality. So if you're looking at the one of the few statutes that actually addresses where the word building code is used and how it can be applied, those particular statutes, there's the gas code, fuel code, a lot of uniform codes that relate to that, basically state in there specifically in a municipality. It does not give any authority to extend those outside of the municipality. And that was not in effect in Lucas as well. So it's kind of a combination of the Levy case coming down, subchapter B being enacted, plus the IRC provisions of the statute as well.
Now, my recollection is that B has to be adopted, and I believe his position would be we haven't adopted it, hence it's inapplicable, hence this discussion is meaningless.
Well, it's meaningless except to the extent, well, they haven't adopted it, because if they had, that would, you know, clarify if they were trying to require the application of subchapter B in this circumstance. It's meaningful in terms of legislative intent, in terms of if the legislature, you know, wants to address, I mean, a good example is 212.03. The legislature says towns can extend their subdivision regulations to the ETJ. It's express. I mean, there's not a whole lot of implication. Now, what it means, that has been in dispute, as this court knows, many times as to how 212.03 gets applied. But in terms of the intent, the argument is that subchapter B addresses building permit issues directly. A involves subdivision in the platting of land, not the construction of buildings. That's the argument. It's different than my first argument. My first argument was, even if they say that A applies, they can't apply it here because they don't have subdivision authority under A in this case, because the property has already been platted by somebody else. They have zero platting authority here.
Are you sort of saying that B clarifies the meaning of A?
I think so. Yes, okay. Your Honor. And I think that's where the legislature had the opportunity to address spot-on building permits. In other words, that was the whole issue in B. The B really has nothing to do with how do I divide my tract, it's a tract, into lots and make roads and parks and that sort of thing. It was how do I handle building permits and construction? And they specifically addressed it, and they said that a city can utilize that subchapter, but they just can't apply it within their ETJ. So I think those are new things that have happened since Lucas that we believe, I guess I'm going to say overrule that precedent for the purposes of argument, but make it no longer applicable here. So from a more global, I guess, standpoint beyond the narrow ruling, we would request that the court consider basically striking down the city's ordinance on the grounds that they don't have any legislative or statutory authority to extend their building codes to their ETJ, not just to our tract, which is platted by a different city, and therefore they lose that jurisdiction, but generally.
Okay, can you, in your time, can you touch on your tax argument?
Well, okay. And I know that that's not before the court, so I don't think we briefed the details on that. But the argument is this, and it has relevance because of the motivation. The city's attorney says our motive is to protect the health, public safety of the people in their territorial jurisdiction. If you read the amicus brief by the Property Owners Association, they, I think, basically said, we don't need your help. You know, basically, we're doing fine. We've got expensive houses on big lots, no safety issues, that sort of thing. That the motivation is, basically, it's revenue generating. Because we have a town of 600, basically, and it's going to be slow growing. It's going to be capped. In our case, the evidence showed, excuse me, a little sore throat, that there was basically a profit of about $14,000 in order to be able to get a building permit. And that's kind of problematic. I frankly told my client, I said, you know, there's a cost benefit here. Do you want to do this as opposed to hiring our firm and going through this process? And he's got it as a matter of principle. He thinks it's wrong. He says that they don't have the right to do it, and he's willing to do what's necessary. And his belief is that it's purely a revenue generator for the city as opposed to the other supposed motivation, because there's no history of there being any safety issues with these houses. They're basically fairly expensive, and not that that necessarily equates to safe, but it's not a situation where you have substandard housing. It's not a situation where you want to protect that housing standard because you may annex the property later, they bring it into your corporate limits,
well,
because they can't do that.
The city is providing no services.
That's
at
correct.
All, zero.
That is
right.
Correct.
And a city cannot tax in the ETJ, right?
That is correct. And they're inhibited even more because they can't provide any utility service because the water is within the Certificate of Convenience and Necessity of Little Elm, and these are all on septic tanks. And the testimony in trial is it would cost millions of dollars for them to extend sanitary sewer lines to their system for these houses that already have septic systems working. So this is a case, you're correct. And it, as a town of 600, it really doesn't provide, you know, even parks or library. There's really no infrastructure that the residents could enjoy anyway. And we asked that, and we were told, no, you can't enjoy those because you don't live here and don't pay taxes.
All right.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you. All right, response.
Give me 1 second, Your Honor. It pleases the court, Andy Messer for the town of Lakewood Village. We are asking that the trial court's judgment of a temporary injunction be affirmed because the property owner in this case flagrantly and repeatedly violated our building codes involving a property that fronts the lake. It is entrenched in Texas jurisprudence that a city may, as a valid exercise of its police power, enact reasonable regulations for the purpose of promoting the health, safety, and welfare of its people. Such police power occurred in this case. Lakewood Village extended its subdivision rules, building codes, and permits to the ETJ as a clear and valid exercise of its police powers. And I did put together a chart of the statutes, what I call the ETJ statutes, that clearly show that building codes and subdivision regulations and permits do extend, and the legislature has provided that all municipalities, not just home rule municipalities, not just general law cities, all Texas municipalities have the authority to extend those rules and enforce them in their extraterritorial jurisdiction. And we believe these rules and codes should be enforced in this case. The Texas legislature has declared in 42.001 of the local government code, it's one of the ordinances that's in your chart. The legislature declared in 42.001 that as a matter of state policy, a municipality's ETJ is used to promote the general health, safety, and welfare of persons residing in, and the statute says, adjacent to the municipality.
And how are you doing that in the face of the International Building Code being in place?
Well, the International Building Code is required to be, as my understanding, applied and adopted by all states.
All over the state of Texas.
That's right.
So it must be pretty bad if it's adopted all over the state of Texas. I mean,
well, I think what they wanted, which is important in this case, is uniformity. Is that it's fair that property owners and developers want to know what are the rules when they go in to develop a piece of property. And if there's uniformity instead of various types and various years of building codes and the Southern Building Code, uniform right. building code being applied, let's have one. But you can adopt local amendments, which Lakewood Village has done to protect the people in its city limits and in its ETJ. And so that statute applies uniformity to the law, which we think is important because we're asking this court to have uniformity here.
And that's your motivation for the $14,000+.
Well, if you want to look at the amount that is charged for the building, that evidence was not adduced at the trial court level because it was ruled it was not relevant at the time. There was not a counterclaim that was filed to attack that. It was simply brought out, we think, erroneously. The trial court ruled erroneously from the property owner's perspective.
Was it admitted in evidence? Is it in the record before us?
No, it is not. It's not in front of the court. It was not in front of the trial court. It was ruled irrelevant. There was not a bill that was made. We were prepared to provide testimony to show that our fees are compatible and about the same, if not equivalent, to all the surrounding municipalities. We didn't put that on because it was ruled irrelevant. It was not attacked on appeal in front of this court, the trial court's ruling on the admissibility. So That really is not an issue that needs to be addressed. We're prepared to. We would like to address that. If they bring another claim at some point in time, we are fully prepared to meet that and to show that our fees are the same and equivalent and are necessary as other towns are.
Section 212.002 in this chart that you gave us specifically applies to rules governing plats and subdivisions of land. Where in this list of sites that you gave us to statutory authority is the authority for a general law city to impose rules in the ETJ concerning building permits?
If you look, I'd say there's two places, Your Honor. One, the 212.002 deals with rules. One of the rules deals with subdivisions of land involving development. And the Dallas Court of Appeals and the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals have looked at that same language and said that means development.
You're talking about Lucas.
I'm talking about Lucas, and there's a Corpus Christi court case as well, Your Honor.
Okay, we've heard about Lucas, okay.
And they both came to the same conclusion. The courts that have addressed this issue, whether building codes can be enforced in the ETJ, Lucas dealt with the building of a water treatment plant. The Corpus Christi court dealt with a mobile home part. And they both of those courts of appeals that have addressed this exact same issue came to the exact same conclusion, which is it's a legitimate exercise of police power to extend your building codes to make sure that it's safe for residents in your ETJ to build there. And we're asking the court
to do
the same
question,
thing.
Is that it's a legitimate exercise of police power? Isn't the real question whether there's some specific statutory authority
sure.
that gives a general law city the authority to do that?
Sure. And I think that is an issue in front of this court. And so that's why I put together these legislative enactments and statutes that talk about that. So 212.002 deals with rules that involve subdivisions of land. And then if you look at 212.003, that says those same rules that deal with development can be extended to the ETJ. Then if you look specifically at the very end, the two statutes I write here or put on here, 214.904A gives express statutory authority for permits in the ETJ for a municipality, a Texas municipality. And then the last one, 233.153, says that if a municipality has a building code in the ETJ, it is exclusively to be used, and the county regulations are not. And Denton County, in this case, recognizes undisputedly Lakewood Villages has this authority in the ETJ. So building permits are expressly allowed in the ETJ under 214.904. Building codes are expressly allowed in 233.153, and all of those can be extended under 212.003. That is the express statutory authority that allows every type of city to extend the regulations to the ETJ. And what's important, you know, the property owner likes to talk about, well, there's a difference in power between a home rule city and a general law city. Not with the legislature and these statutes. They don't make that distinction. The legislature, if you read these statutes, about 15 times they use the word municipality. And municipality is defined in the same local government code, 1.0053, that's also on your chart. Municipality is a general law city, special law city, or home rule city. All three of those types of cities are a municipality. And when the legislature says the municipality can do these things, can extend your permitting power to the ETJ, can extend your building codes to the ETJ, can extend your subdivision regulations to the ETJ, a municipality can do that. It's every type of municipality in the state of Texas.
I still don't see in here. I see what you've cited to, time for issuance of municipal building permit. I still don't see anywhere in here that this says that a municipality under this definition has the right to extend building permits to its ETJ. Other than what you've talked about in the development word under really what is being promoted under 212.002.
If Texas municipality did not have the power to extend its building codes and its permits to the ETJ, why would it be addressed in these two statutes specifically?
So we're just supposed to make that leap with you and assume that the fact that they define municipality as they did and they discuss these things really is a specific grant of authority for you to extend your building codes to your ETJ.
If these statutes don't mean that, then they're useless. They're meaningless. They have no meaning. And I don't, you know, the text.
There are other municipalities that can do that.
What?
Question.
No.
Home rule?
They don't carve out home rule in these statutes. If you look at other places in the local government code, there are places in 215, 216, 217 dealing with signs, nuisances, et cetera, where they have a specific regulation that deals only with home rule municipalities that they state, or general law cities that they state. They don't do that here. They don't delineate or distinguish a particular type of municipality. They say all municipalities. And those types that they list are the only types that I'm aware of that exist in the state of Texas.
But if they wanted to make that specific grant of authority, they could have written a statute that's just like 212.002, which does give specific authority to extend rules governing plats and subdivisions, but they didn't do that.
Well, subdivision regulations, those are building codes. Those are building standards. They deal with development of property that's talked about in 212.002.
Case law authority that has interpreted subdivision regulations to be equal to building permits?
Well, that's what was addressed in the Lucas case and the Corpus Christi case. It's the same language that they addressed in this statute. That language and that power hasn't changed. Both of those courts came to that conclusion and said that subdivisions of land connotes and includes development. And development is specifically mentioned in 212.002. If you don't have the power to regulate development so you can protect the health, safety, and welfare of those in the ETJ, I don't know what that would be doing. To me, these statutes give that authority to all Texas municipalities. So the reason that's important is really for two policy reasons. One, this power really is meant to protect people, not only in the city limits, but also in the ETJ. So think about this. What's in the best interest for the residents of the state of Texas for building regulations in the ETJ? Safety. And so if you look at the state policy, under 42001, regulation of subdivision rules, building codes, and the ETJ is important so that safe construction methods and materials are guaranteed to be used. Municipal regulation in the ETJ is an important function of local government in order to meet the gaps in safety that occur when property development is unsupervised or undersupervised. As a state policy, that's why the legislature said this is state policy. They state it in 42001. To promote and protect the general health, safety, and welfare of persons residing where? In the city and adjacent to the city.
Mr. Messer.
So they're connoting, they're anticipating that it is a duty.
Mr. Messer,
and it's
I have a question for you, sir. If you would please help me walk through, you've given us a good long list of these particular, or some of the, not of a few of the provisions in the municipal code. I'm interested in the language in 212.002. which is entitled rules, and it specifically says that after a public hearing, the governing body may adopt rules governing plats and subdivisions of land within a municipality's jurisdiction. Then it goes on to promote the things you're talking about, police
right.
power. Now, counsel for the appellant has said the city cannot have, doesn't have, will never have the power to regulate plats and subdivisions of the land because that's already been done by another city. Do you agree with that?
No. If you look, Lakewood Village, if you look at the map of Lakewood Village, it has a lot of undeveloped area that's in its ETJ, and that they have the power of regulating plats in the ETJ, besides
all right, I'm talking about this
codes.
Land we're looking at here today that's got this particular tract of land
right.
that's involved by Mr. Biggio
right.
that he owns that he's trying to build a house on.
Right.
That has already been platted by the city of Little Lake.
Well, there was a final plat that was signed off by Denton County and Little Lake. It was never presented to Lakewood Village. But this particular tract, uncontestedly.
Well, no, wait, I'm not talking about what's happening in terms of the activities other than the fact that the city of Little Elm has already platted and subdivided this property in which Mr. Beasley, in this whole area out there where Mr. Bizio's property is located. So the city, your client, cannot go in there and replat that without approval of the people that are living in that subdivision, if I'm understanding what citations you've given us in your briefing, as well as what the citations given us by the appellant.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'd have to go back and look at platting statutes to see. Normally, platting follows the control in the ETJ. So whoever has the ETJ has platting authority. This is where Mr. Bizio's property is located. It's undisputedly Lakewood Village ETJ. There's no issue about that. So normally, platting would fall to our jurisdiction and our power.
I thought the rule was that the platting of a subdivision that's in two ETJs goes to the larger of the two.
Yeah, I think that statute says if the tract is in two subdivisions, then it goes to the larger one. And this tract, undisputedly, is only in Lakewood Village's ETJ.
So every single resident is his own tract. So why do we even plat and subdivide if every single residence is his own tract? You got to plat in every single individual residence?
Well, a piece of property can be subdivided by plat. And in this instance, that development is partly in Little Elm's ETJ, is partly in Lakewood Village's ETJ. But I think that statute talks about that particular property. And this particular property is only in Lakewood Village's ETJ.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Starting with the last argument first, a tract is not a lot under the statute. And if you look at 212.04, it says the owner of a tract of land located within the limits of the ETJ of municipality who divides the tract into two or more parts must have a plat of the subdivision prepared. It also says a division of a tract includes a division regardless of whether it's by meets and bounds or something else. So there's not a definition section in 212, but just logically, the tract is the undivided, unplatted property. It says if you have a tract and if you want to subdivide it, you have to go through this process. What you end up with is not a tract. It is a series of lots and dedicated infrastructure. It can be a street, it can be a park, schools, whatever that is. There is zero case law that indicates that under the purposes of 212 that a tract in a lot or the same thing.
This division that is in existence for the tract of the for the plot of land that is lot 84, block 1.
That's the Bizio lot.
The Bizio lot, and that is not designated as tract 84 or tract something or another. It's designated lot 84 in block 1. So
that's
the
correct.
Platting that was previously done by the city of Little Elm listed this tract, this land, as lot 84, block 1, tract anything.
That's correct. So I'm not sure how big the property was originally. Let's just say it's 100 acres. It's not platted. It hadn't been developed. That's the tract that then has to go through the process when you subdivide. And then you're correct. Then it becomes lots and streets and things like that. The tract designation goes away at that point. Going back to the safety issue, I mean, I think we all agree and support safe construction of houses. I think the Texas Association of Builders brief says that. When we're talking consistency, the 233.153 says whether you're in the city or whether you're in the county, the builder has to comply with the International Residential Code. That's the consistency. And I find it somewhat ironic that the opposing counsel says it's all for consistency, but we're going to pass a lot of local amendments that are basically our predilection. I mean, the International Residential Code's about this thick. I mean, the legislature said that should be the standard for a purpose. There is the ability to amend that for local amendments, I think that that's really just predilection of a building official for certain types of materials, but doesn't go to safety at all. So if we're talking about uniformity and safety, the statute already covers that. Because if you're in the county, you can go through the county and make sure that you get the permits needed to build according to the International Residential Code. If you're in the city, you can do the same thing. Going back to the permit fee issue, I'd refer the court when they have time to 2RR9293, page 144, and 3RR19. And that there is evidence in the record, and there was testimony by the building official, and he said, for me to do my plans, to review the plans and to do these inspections will cost $1,200. The subcontractors are each required to pay $100 to the city, so that equaled $1,200. The net is $14,646 on top of that.
Now, that's in the record.
That is in the record. I just gave the citations right there.
All right.
The Weslaco case really has, I know there was a question about the case law he referenced, Lucas. I think we all recognize that Lucas is there. Weslaco really has nothing to do with this case. That case involved a mobile home park, and so the issue there was if I have long-term leases on mobile homes or RV spaces, is that a subdivision or not? There was no building permit issue there because I guess you have to get something for the foundation, but it was not a building code extension issue. So from my review of the cases, the only case that has said that a city can extend their building codes to their ETJ as part of 212 is the Lucas case. If there are any other questions.
All right, thank you. Your case is submitted.
Thank you.
We appreciate everyone being here today and showing an interest in these cases. And we will now be adjourned.